I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. If you think you're seeing the president everywhere, well, you probably are.
Today on Face the Nation, the president is all over television this morning, including right here.
And we begin with President Obama.
One-on-one with President Obama.
It's a genuine thrill for all of us and an honor to introduce our guest tonight. Please welcome Barack Obama, ladies and gentlemen.
En una entrevista con Univision en la Casa Blanca, el presidente Barack Obama nos explica que...
Our guest, the president of the United States, Barack Obama.
If you've seen him once, you've probably seen him, well, we don't know if it's 1,000 times. But since he returned from his August break, the president has been seen on the small screen making his case for health care reform and global cooperation on the economy, and to scold Iran, and to revisit Afghanistan policy. And today, the president heads to Copenhagen to make a personal pitch to bring the Olympics back home to Chicago. So we wanted to ask, when it comes to the president, how much is too much? Is the president overexposed or just well-adjusted to the new realities of the new media age? With us now to talk about all this is Pulitzer Prize-winning presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin. Baratunde Thurston, he's co-founder of the political blog Jack and Jill Politics, and he's a writer and a stand-up comedian. And Matthew Continetti, associate editor of the Weekly Standard. He's also a regular visitor on our political panel, The Loyal Opposition. Thanks to all of you for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Matt, I'm going to start with you. Your latest piece in the Weekly Standard is titled The Obama Show, Time to Change the Channel. You think Obama is overexposed?
I do, and I think if you're in the Obama White House, you must be looking at the polls and saying, why isn't this working? I mean, we went through the soundscape at the top of the program. The guy's done five Sunday shows. He gave the major address to Congress. He gave two major addresses when he was in New York last week. And yet, if you're the White House, you're looking at, well, where's the public support that he's supposed to be engendering with all these appearances? It's not there. The more Obama talks, the more his ratings decline.
I do have to ask, though, as we mentioned, you are a conservative and a Republican, and as we said, part of the loyal opposition. Isn't that what the loyal opposition does? Is part of it, you don't want to hear from him because he's not your guy.
I'm trying to give you the perspective of an independent analyst, and if you just look at the results, what's the point of doing all this talking if you're not getting any results? And so far, the White House isn't getting the results in terms of public support.
Doris Kearns Goodwin, how does this level of media presence and this use of the media compare with those of past presidents? Obviously, there are tools available that weren't there before, but most of them are.
Well, the interesting thing is the goal of presidential leadership is to mobilize public sentiment and to draw on it, shape and educate public opinion to support their goals. So I think what was said is right, that the question is this much too much or is it not enough? Teddy Roosevelt was really the first president in the 20th century who understood the power of personal publicity. His words, his pictures were everywhere in an era of mass newspapers. The first time we had mass newspapers, you'd see a picture of him saying, speak softly and carry a big stick, and then he'd be fighting against the railroads and Standard Oil, and he pushed a reluctant Congress then to pass the legislation that he wanted, so it absolutely worked. The interesting thing is when his Democratic challenger was then followed around by the press, just as they always followed Teddy around when he skinny-dipped in the morning in the Hudson River, he was appalled. That's true overexposure.
Skinny-dipping, you're right. I don't know if I want to see that.
But then FDR comes along, and he's at the time when a new technology comes in, radio. And the interesting thing is his radio addresses, which were only 30 in 12 years, because he did worry if they became routine, they would lose their effectiveness. After one of his great addresses, people wrote in by the thousands saying, you've got to go on the radio every day. It's the only way morale will be sustained. This was during the war. But he said, if they become routine, then people will not listen. And it took him, he said, 4 to 5 days of long overtime work to prepare for these addresses. He said he couldn't take time away from more vital things. But on the other hand, he also did over 1,000 press conferences 2 times a week. And as a result, he was able to reach the public. JFK comes along. Television becomes the new medium for him. James Reston said when he decided to have live television press conference, he thought it was the goofiest idea since the hula hoop because it could produce a slip of catastrophic proportions, but it never really did. He, too, had to prepare for 4 or 5 days for these. He said it was like a final exam. So what I think you see with Obama is a combination of all of these forms of media, the press conferences, the morning shows, the comedy shows, the town halls, the internet, and I think he would argue that in today's world with so much out there, you have to be out even more than you would have before in order to get your message across.
Barbara Artundi, we called you because you've kind of got a finger or a foot, if you want to call it, in all these various media. I mean,
one
of the things people have commented on is his appearance on David Letterman, a sitting president appearing on a late-night comedy show. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, have an issue with that. And you've got a foot in all these worlds, in politics, in comedy.
Right.
What's your take on this?
Well, first, I think the nation and the media are adjusting to the idea that we have a president who seeks exposure, who doesn't go to bed at 10 and spend half the year clearing brush and send his vice president off to secret locations to try to undermine the Constitution in some way. And so I think we're all getting used to this notion that here's a young, energetic guy who likes the media and he tries to take advantage of it. In terms of what Dr. Goodwin just said, I think we have a great point about how the media has changed. For people in the media, that's where the criticism's coming from. It's coming in the form of a rhetorical question from media pundits, and it's coming from the GOP. Two expected sources. And the media has changed so much. If you are spending all your time watching all media, all you see is Obama. But if you're an actual citizen, you watch sports, you see Obama on ESPN. You watch comedy, you see Obama on Letterman. You watch Univision, you see Obama there. You watch 60 Minutes, you see him there. So the president is trying to be where the people are. And for those rare people who are everywhere, that's all they see. But then we've become a nation of niches. And in that sense, I think he's doing more to connect with the tools that we have available.
But what about Matthew's point, though? You're saying he says the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and it's not working. There is other data, though. I mean, Politico just has a report suggesting that his slide has stopped, and it's the stop in his approval slide coincides actually with his increased media exposure. So that's their take on it. What's your perspective?
With increased media exposure, I mean, we live in a very high-velocity, live media environment, and the analysis that goes along with it is moment by moment. So I think it's a bit too soon to say he has failed due to overexposure. His policies are still popular, depending on how you ask the question, 65% support for the public option. His personal ratings are still quite high, and he's still, as far as I understand, doing well for the time that he's been in office versus other new presidents.
Not as high as they were.
Right, not as high as they were for him, but reflecting historically, and I would defer to the doctor on this one, to the historian, to check my facts, but from what I've read, he's actually doing relatively well versus someone else 9-10 months in office.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're asking, is Obama overexposed? And we're speaking with writer and comedian Baratunde Thurston, historian Doris Kearns Goodwin, and journalist and writer Matthew Continetti. Man, you know, Baratunde kind of alludes to maybe it's a cultural issue. Is part of it that we have, as a society, very different expectations of what the president is supposed to be? I mean, some people say, well, they vote for the president based on who they want to have a beer with. Other people expect a certain level of distance and detachment, and if you don't meet that standard, then they're not going to be pleased with you. What do you think? Do you think there's a cultural expectation component to our analysis of this?
Well, some people like seeing a lot of Obama, and that's great. And, you know, the more he's out there, the more you get to see him. I'm just looking at it from a totally cold, amoral political standpoint. 4 national televised press conferences. The ratings declined each one. It's not...
You mean the television ratings
ratings. Well, look at the approval ratings. I believe Obama's ratings had fallen precipitously among seniors and independents over the course of his presidency, including all this time. I mean, remember, this just didn't start this month, this media blitz. I mean, he was on Leno in the spring. Overexposure does 2 things. One, it minimizes the importance of each individual press appearance, so that eventually the public just thinks, oh, there's a president again. And 2, it maximizes the chances of a gaffe, of misspeaking. Now, so far, President Obama, since September is over, President Obama did a good job in September. He got through the month without making any gaffes. But if you go back, at one of his most recent national press conferences, he called the Cambridge police stupid, and that occasioned, of course, the beer summit. If you go back even further, you had the Tonight Show appearance where he made the tasteless joke about the Special Olympics. You go back even further than that, even before he was president, in December at his press conference, and he had that jibe at Nancy Reagan about the astrologer, that he had to apologize for all of those things that ended up. If he was just a little bit more reserved, maybe, he wouldn't have to worry about that.
You know, that's something that people are normally say about first ladies. You never have to apologize for what you don't say. So, Doris Kearns Goodwin, what were you going to say?
What I was going to say is that, on the other hand, yes, there is a danger of making a gaffe, but none of those were catastrophic the way that James Reston worried they might be. And the other problem is that if you constantly keep a girdle on yourself for fear of making some sort of gaffe, then you lose the spontaneity, which is what happened to LBJ, for example. He was so worried because he had this wonderful, coarse, colorful language that if he allowed himself to speak spontaneously, things would slip out. So as a result, he took the opposite tack. He had this teleprompter in front of him that they called Mother because he wouldn't go anywhere without Mother. And as a result, we never saw that character who would have been much more accessible, I think, to the public. JFK took that chance in those live television press conferences, and people saw the quick wit and the spontaneous humor. And, you know, at one point somebody said to him, there was just a Republican resolution that said you were a failure, and he immediately quicked back, and he said, well, I'm sure it passed unanimously. People love seeing that spontaneity, and the price you may pay is you may make a mistake. Reagan made some slips when he talked about trees causing pollution and made some false assertions about the unemployment rate, and they scaled down his press conferences as a result, and he did these very effective visual settings with prepared remarks. So it depends upon the quality of the person. If you're able to do it, and I think there is a fine line, I agree, between too much of it and not doing enough, but just to go back to the public opinion polls, I saw an article in the New York Times just maybe 4 or 5 days ago saying that ever since this last media blitz, he had stabilized his approval ratings and the support for his health care plan was up.
Well, let me just clarify that. We need to take a short break. We're going to come back with our panel in just a few minutes, but let me just clarify that before we take our break. After sliding through the summer, President Obama's approval ratings have leveled out, settling in the low 50s. They are in the same range as recent presidents. His polling position going into the fall is descending from the heavens of the spring when it was in the mid-60s. And some top pollsters say his 52% average approval rating in Gallup's September survey is well within the expected range in the first year of a new administration, comparables being Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan. So we can chew on that as we take our break. And we're speaking with presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin, journalist Matthew Continetti, and comedian and writer Baratunde Thurston. We're talking about whether President Obama is overexposed. We need to take a short break, but we'll return in a moment. Please stay with us on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about President Obama being everywhere all the time. How much is too much FaceTime from our president? Our guests are presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin, the Weekly Standards Associate Editor Matthew Continetti, and Baratunde Thurston, co-founder of the blog Jack and Jill Politics. He's also a stand-up comedian. And, you know, we'd like to ask the listeners, as you just heard, he's one of the most visible presidents of our time. We'd like to ask you, how much is too much for you? Are you tired of the president bumping your favorite evening television shows to address the nation? Are you tired of hearing about him when you turn on your radio dial? Is our broadcast today just too much Obama for you? To tell us what you think and to hear what other listeners are saying, you can call our comment line at 202-842-3522. That number again, 202-842-3522. Or you can visit our website at npr.org, go to programs, click on Tell Me More, blog it out, overexpose yourselves to us if you would care to. Baratunde, is he giving you good material to work with at least? Is he giving you a lot to?
I think the entire situation that we find ourselves in, because it is often so absurd, is ripe for, you know, comedic and satirical and just political fodder. Matthew referred to the drop in polls over the summer. And you'll note that's a time when Obama wasn't out. And instead, the message that the White House allowed to creep out kind of almost insidiously was this idea that his health care plan was going to kill old people. And so it's not a surprise to see a decline in support among senior citizens when they're being constantly hit with a message that isn't countered, that their death panels are going to come to get you, like Obama's coming to get
but
you.
But I hear
sleep.
That as a comedian, he's rather challenging. I hear that it's actually rather precarious territory for some comedians to make fun of. Do you find that to be true?
I think if you look at places like The Onion, where I also work, like there's plenty of work to go around. I think people were anticipating it to be very hard. I mean, he's an exhausting guy to keep up with, not because he is Obama, but because he's all over the place. I think it's part of why the press is frustrated.
Well, what about the Copenhagen thing? Are you going to make fun of that? I think that's funny.
Oh, the president's leaving America. Like, I think more people should leave America. Like, I don't know. I think the country would be better if more people practiced, you know, using their passports and got out and saw some of the world. I think the media coverage around him, some of the things he does, sure, like a beer summit's an awkward and weird thing to do, and you don't solve all race relations and the things he didn't talk about. but talked about the Skip Gates situation. But him going to Copenhagen isn't inherently hilarious. I think the reaction that this is somehow a bad thing to want America to have the Olympics, I think that's more hilarious.
That's interesting because Matthew, as we mentioned today, he's in Copenhagen lobbying the International Olympic Committee. The Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Steele criticized the president for this and said this is not a good use of his time at this point. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs responded by asking if Steele wanted the U.S. to lose and not to get the 2016 Olympics. But then, of course, the dean of, if you will, the political reporters, David Broder, wrote in his column today to say he welcomes the president going. What I'm wondering is the issue not just media per se, but that there are so many priorities and that there's uncertainty about whether the president is handling too many priorities at once or juggling too many priorities. What do you think? It's not just a matter of media, but policy.
I think you have to look at how is he handling them. Well, what we see with this president is he delegates. He outsources with the health care bill. He's not going to give a bill. He had to come in at the beginning of September to say what he wanted in it, but he left Congress to do it. It was the same thing with the stimulus. He says, I want a stimulus. Congress works it out. In both cases, health care and the stimulus, you get a product that not everyone is satisfied with and the public eventually turns on. Look at it, the Afghan war. General McChrystal told 60 Minutes on Sunday that since his appointment as Obama's handpicked general in the spring to actually yesterday and the three-hour meeting they had at the White House on the war, he had spoken to President Obama once. Just once. That's his general that he picked. Well, he outsources it. He's picking the person. He's letting them do their thing so he can have time to go and do all these other things. I think the president should spend more time in the weeds governing the country. And that's something he can't – I hope that he – picks up the phone on Air Force One on his way over to Denmark to talk to his general.
Okay. Doris Kearns Goodwin, what's your perspective on this? Matthew's saying that he's outsourcing too much, and this is why he's got all this time to do these interviews.
Well, just to go back to what you were saying, I mean, I do think there is a concern about so many priorities at the same time, but I'm not sure he can do anything about that. I'm sure if he had his way, he would have preferred to deal with one crisis at a time, deal with the economy first, and then you deal with the two wars, and then you deal with the financial crisis, but they all came on his plate when he first became president. So the fact that he's had to move in so many different directions at the same time and make a lot of different decisions at the same time is just the modern presidency in a very difficult time. Probably more things on his plate now than any president in recent history. When FDR became president, he had the Depression, of course, which was worse than our recession, but the foreign policy crisis didn't occur until later in his regime. When LBJ had the Great Society, until Vietnam came, he could focus on domestic issues. But this guy has to deal with all of these things at the same time, so it's going to be complicated to split up his time.
Okay, final thought. I'm going to say, Baratini, I'm going to give you the final word here.
I'd like to paraphrase the great poet, Donald Rumsfeld, and really piggybacking on our great historian's perspective here. You don't govern the country you'd want or you'd like to have. You govern the country that you have. And, you know, we are
That's
fortunate.
Like defense lawyers say, you can't pick your victim.
You really can. You know, we have the luxury of an uninformed healthcare debate when a year ago, everyone thought the country was over, like literally over. Wall Street was going to zero. No one's going to have a job. There's going to be bread lines. So I think it is helpful to keep that perspective of what he's been handed and how he's handling it. We'll see. It's early. We're doing real-time analysis of conversations that have yet to be completed and acts that have yet to have an impact. So let's see what goes down.
But it is a little funny for journalists to be talking about how he's talking too much.
I mean, it's just like...
But not to me.
How will history remember Obama yesterday? Like, that's the question. Like, what did the president do yesterday?
Well, thank you all for being with us.
You're very welcome.
I have the feeling we'll be revisiting this topic, or not, if he takes Matthew's instruction. Baratunde Thurston is a comedian. He writes for The Onion, The Huffington Post, and his blog, Jack and Jill Politics. He was kind enough to join us here in Studio 4B in Washington, along with Matthew Continetti, associate editor of The Weekly Standard and author of a forthcoming book, if I have that right, on Sarah Palin. He was here with me. Also, he's a member of our Loyal Opposition panel, and also Pulitzer Prize-winning historian Doris Kearns Goodwin. She's the author of many books, latest being Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln, and she joined us from her home office in Boston. I thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.